So as monuments to the Confederacy go down, what goes in their place? New Orleans Mayor Mitch Landrieu, again from his recent speech.
Why there are no slave ship monuments, no prominent markers on public land to remember the lynchings or the slave blocks, nothing to remember this long chapter of our lives of pain, of sacrifice, of shame, all of it happening on the soil of New Orleans.
There is an effort already underway to mark what happened to over 4,000 lynching victims between 1877 and 1950, and the message their murders implied to Americans black and white. The Equal Justice Initiative documented those Southern lynchings in a report 2 years ago, and it also has set out to make that history seen. Brian Stevenson is a director of the Equal Justice Initiative and professor of law at NYU School of Law.
Where I live now in Montgomery, Alabama, we have 59 markers and monuments to the Confederacy. 59. You can't go anywhere in this community without encountering a street name or a building or a monument. And I would actually accept if people in the South said, you know what, let's not talk about anything that happened before 1965. It's just too painful. I don't think it would be smart, but I could at least accept it. But we actually love talking about mid-19th century history. We just don't want to talk about slavery. You know, the effort in New Orleans was sparked by the tragic murders of 9 African Americans in Charleston, South Carolina, by a young man who had wrapped himself in the stories that there is something noble in this identity of Confederate resistance to integration. The Germans lived through a horrific era where Nazis killed millions of Jewish people. And if they never tried to address the identity created by the horrors of the Holocaust, I don't think we would feel about them the way many of us feel. But because there was a movement to create an identity that says we are struggling to recover from all of that ugliness, we trust them. You contrast that with the American South, and it's the opposite. It's if we're glorifying and romanticizing the leadership of the Third Reich. I mean, in Alabama, where I live, Confederate Memorial Day is a state holiday. On Martin Luther King Day, it is Martin Luther King / Robert E. Lee Day, and it has an impact.
So let's talk about the design of the Memorial to Peace and Justice that you've planned. It has 800 columns, each representing a county where you've documented lynchings. You also have a separate place with identical columns. Each county will be able to take home as monuments, and you're waiting for them to do so. In Montgomery, there is one along the road. Do you think people will take those monuments?
I do. And I think the conversation that will happen in these communities about whether to take these monuments will be important. And even if the first time that conversation happens, there's no success, I think it's important to talk about history. We've started putting up markers at lynching sites across the region. And I really think it's important. Part of the reason why we're so indifferent to racial bias today, we're so non-responsive to racial inequality, is that because we've kind of created a cultural norm that it's just not that big a deal. I mean, we tolerated thousands of people being burned alive in the courthouse square. I mean, thousands of people would come in a carnival atmosphere. And, you know, the children and grandchildren of the people who did that have not been asked to reflect on that, to talk about that, to think about that.
I have to say that I looked at the video on your website of the memorial. This isn't built yet. This is the artist's rendering, but it is almost excruciatingly powerful, even on a little computer screen. The columns are hanging as if from trees.
And we're hoping to open next year. When I go to the Holocaust Memorial, I walk through there, and at the end of that experience, I say, never again. And I think we need to create spaces in this country where we are pushed, encouraged to commit ourselves to saying never again when it comes to the kind of racial terror that we lived through in the American South throughout the first half of the 20th century. And if we don't create cultural spaces to help us get there, I worry that we won't get there on our own.
That brings us to the Equal Justice Initiative, your organization, and its efforts to tally the number and locations of thousands of lynchings in this country. Now, I think those of us on the coasts and in the Northeast and the Northwest may take some comfort in believing that lynching was exclusively a, you know, Southern thing, but it wasn't, was it?
It was not. On June 13, we'll be actually releasing data on lynchings from states all over the country, in Maryland, in Illinois, in Minnesota, in Ohio, the Midwest and West. There's no place in America where we can claim any kind of sanctuary from the implications of this legacy.
You also have a plan for a museum called From Enslavement to Mass Incarceration. It's
right.
housed near the site of a slave auction site. The name suggests a continuum.
We want to create a narrative museum. We want people to go on a journey. It will start with the active domestic slave trade. You'll see slave pens. You'll hear the voices of formerly enslaved people presented through these holograms. It'll almost be like ghosts are speaking to you. You'll see the human bodies and structures through sculpture. And we want to talk about the way in which slavery evolved. I don't believe that slavery ended in 1865. The 13th Amendment didn't deal with this problem of white supremacy. It's what created the racial terror that led to lynching. And so you'll move from slavery in our museum to this era of lynchings. And then you'll go from that era into the segregation era. You can't really understand the civil rights movement and these Jim Crow laws without understanding the backstory of slavery and lynching. And we celebrate the civil rights movement without really reflecting on the fact that we didn't deal with this narrative of racial difference, this ideology of white supremacy. So today, we have a very racialized criminal justice system where the Bureau of Justice predicts that 1 in 3 black male babies is expected to go to jail or prison. We see these horrific disparities. So the museum tries to draw this through line so that when you leave, hopefully, you'll be motivated to say, never again. How do I engage with confronting this legacy when it manifests itself in our criminal justice system, in employment settings, in public discourse?
You have this quote about poverty. Say it so I don't mess it up.
I don't believe that the opposite of poverty is wealth. I believe the opposite of poverty is justice.
That's another part of the story. The red lines, all the way through the subprime mortgages, the
Absolutely.
Inability to move from one place to another.
Yeah, most people don't appreciate that as a result of the terrorism that was going on in the Deep South, millions of African Americans fled. That's how these communities in Cleveland and Chicago and Detroit and Oakland and Los Angeles became the communities they are today. The black people in those spaces didn't go there as immigrants. They went there as refugees and exiles from terror. And that exodus carried a very heavy economic burden. And when they got to these communities and they were excluded through redlining, when they were not provided the services that we provided to other immigrant communities, it created this kind of generational poverty, this structural poverty.
Now, the Equal Justice Initiative is based in Montgomery, right?
That's correct.
Just last week, lawmakers in Alabama approved a bill that would, and I quote, prohibit the relocation, removal, alteration, renaming, or other disturbance of any memorial building, memorial street, or monument that has stood on public property for more than 40 years without permission from a new state commission. This is widely seen as a way of protecting Confederate symbols. And the governor even added a provision that schools could change locations and renovate, but they couldn't change their names.
Right.
So that's where you've situated the Equal Justice Initiative.
It is. This bill is absolutely tragic. It is a setback. It is the politics of resistance to the kind of progress that we need to make. We're not trying to punish Montgomery for its history. We're really trying to liberate it. I think many leaders have a hard time saying, I'm wrong. They think that makes you look weak. I actually think when you're able to say, I made a mistake, you can get stronger. And so we've made it clear we're not interested in punishing Montgomery or the American South for this history. We really just want to create a space that's healthier.
And here's where we really differ from Berlin. You have a couple of generations removed from the people who participated in the Holocaust. But here in the U.S., for instance, after the removal of the New Orleans monuments, a Mississippi lawmaker named Carl Oliver posted on Facebook that if the, quote, leadership of Louisiana wants to destroy historical monuments of our history, in all caps, they should be lynched, also in capital letters. He deleted that, but is this too soon?
Well, I think we're long overdue. And there are reasons why we're just getting to this conversation because, you know, when we're struggling to recover from slavery and you're facing lynching, you can't actually talk about the horrors of slavery. You've got to deal with the horrors of lynching. When you've gotten past public spectacle lynchings, but you're still dealing with disenfranchisement, Jim Crow, and segregation, you can't really talk about the problems of lynching. You're dealing with legalized racial subordination. When you get past that era and you see all of this chronic poverty and you're still dealing with mass incarceration, it's hard to get to the space where you can do the cultural work. But I think the time is now. We don't have the kind of shame that I think we need to have. And some people will hear that and think, well, I don't want to feel shame. But the truth is that you have to. You know, I represent people in criminal cases. And my clients, when they have parolable sentences, go before a parole board, if they don't say, I'm sorry, if they don't express some remorse for the crime for which they have been convicted, the parole board will not let them out. And they won't let them out because they don't trust them to recognize and appreciate the wrongfulness of their conduct. Well, it's the same for a collective community. If we don't acknowledge the horror of slavery and lynching and segregation, it's hard to trust people to be committed to racial equality and fair treatment of everyone. And that's the problem with this legislator's comments. It evokes this kind of absence of shame for what happened. It romanticizes it. He wants to replicate it. And we're not going to be a free country while we believe that we can tolerate that vision of how we relate to one another.
The Southern Poverty Law Center has tallied over 700 monuments to the Confederacy on public lands. This process of taking them down is really just beginning. There's so much resistance. Sometimes it's violent. Where do you think the South goes from here?
You know, what happened in New Orleans is that a group of people actually began to understand the truth behind these statues and monuments and memorials. You know, we talk a lot about truth and reconciliation. You can't have the reconciliation without the truth.
Brian, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Brian Stevenson is the director of the Equal Justice Initiative and professor of law at NYU School of Law, and he's the author of Just Mercy, A Story of Justice and Redemption.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Mira Sharma, Alana Casanova-Burgess, Jesse Brenneman, Michael Loewinger, and Leia Fetter. And our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineers this week were Sam Baer and Terrence Bernardo.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. Jim Schachter is WNYC's vice president for news. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
On the Media is supported by the Ford Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.